Welcome back to The Hum and the Holler. And this is our year-long adventure through the fables of 2022's calendar, Beloved Stranger. These fables are published on our website on the first of every month, and then we read them aloud here on this podcast and talk a bit about what's coming up for us in this part of the story. Also, the fables are appropriate for all ages, but these podcasts may not be, so please just screen them before sharing them with sensitive ears.
We want to thank all of our Patreon supporters for their support. We're so truly grateful for you and for everybody listening, whether or not you support us on Patreon. And you can check out The Hum, that is the bonus astrology podcast that I do on the same feed. There is a new episode up right now for the Scorpio new moon, which is also an eclipse that happened on the 25th, just the other day. And there will be a new one on November 22nd in time for the Sagittarius new moon on November 23rd.
And thank you all for your patience and graciousness, as this is a late podcast this month because we have been deep in projects that have been swallowing up our time. And right now is the perfect time to record the podcast. So that's why we're doing it. And we're so glad you're here joining us. We are Abacus Corvus. I am Joe, and I'm alive in the hills of Madison County in Western North Carolina on stolen Cherokee land.
And I am Karina, and I'm a little bit sniffly sitting in my dusty closet recording this, and I'm living on Lenni Lenape land, now known as Philadelphia. This month, we're in chapter 10 of our fables. Joe, do you want to read for us?
I really do. This one especially. Crow awoke to a gray morning that matched her mood. She didn't know what to do or where to go, so she flew to the very top of the tallest tree, hoping for a better view of the world around her. But everything was swallowed in mist and low-lying clouds. Nothing had gone right since she left the mountain. No one understood her in this far-off forest. She might as well just go home. At the thought of home, Crow felt a longing for her own nest and the familiar faces of her family. The feeling was so strong she began flying in that direction at once. With each pump of her wings through the heavy morning air, she became more and more determined to put this whole journey to rest. She would simply make up a story to tell her family, something that would help keep them from going to war. But with those thoughts, she remembered why she left. And she knew deep down that no one at home would understand her either. She swooped in low, unsteady circles until she decided that if she was going to be misunderstood everywhere, she might as well be misunderstood in her own home. Eventually, she neared the mountain. As the trees grew sparse and gray stone faces appeared, she remembered the roses and their odd laughter. Maybe she would see more of them here on the side of the mountain. That was the first pleasant thought she'd had all day. But when she landed to rest her wings, there were no roses in sight. Her mood got worse and worse. She began picking up small rocks and seed husks and collecting them on a nearby tree branch. When she had a sizable collection, she settled grumpily on the branch and began flicking them onto the ground below. She hoped this game would distract her from how upset she was feeling, but she also secretly hoped to hit some unsuspecting creature on the head and amuse herself with their surprise. But Crow was the one who got a surprise when she kicked a rock into the brush and heard a snake hiss with displeasure. "What is this?" said one voice. "A stone on my nose." "Oh, sorry," Crow squawked. "It's a gift from Stormy Bird Crow, I see." This was a different snake voice, with a deeper rumble underneath the hissing. She flew down to meet the two snakes, knowing she probably owed them an apology. Besides, she had been pretty lonely all day and hadn't talked to snakes in a long time. "Hi, hello, I'm sorry for the stone on your nose." But she was cut off by one of them, whose golden patterns hypnotized her slightly as the snake moved. "No, sorry, necessary, Stormy Bird Crow. You struck your quarry, so I salute you." "My quarry? Oh no, I wasn't aiming for you at all. I was just..." And again she was interrupted. "Just what, Bird Crow?" The golden snake's voice grew more intense. "Tossing stones for no reason at all, with no sense of what is stirring in you." something must be stirring in you. Some anger, perhaps? Crow paused and then spoke quietly. Yeah, I guess I am angry. She was too tired to argue with what she knew was true. She was upset, and she was throwing rocks because she was upset. And she even thought to herself that she wanted to hit someone. That's right, the snake said, as if she heard Crow's thoughts. You have reasons in you to justify your violence. There was something about that word, violence. Crow shivered as the snake drew out the word into four whole syllables. Violence. Wasn't preventing violence the whole reason she left on this journey to begin with? And here she was, being violent for no other reason except that she was upset. You're right, she admitted. I have been violent, and I don't like it, and I will never throw rocks again. Rocks have less to do with this than feelings, Stormy Bird Crow, said the gold-patterned snake as she slithered closer to Crow. You say you don't want violence, but can you say you'll not get angry? What do rocks matter when your anger stays hungry? Would you truly deny yourself a meal? Crow was a little confused by the notion of her anger being hungry, but she was intrigued. You mean throwing the rocks is a way to satisfy my anger, and even if I don't throw rocks, I'll still have this anger that wants to be satisfied? Yes, Bird Crow. Always important to feed your feelings, or else they will make a meal out of you. And the golden snake flicked out her tongue as though suddenly interested in having a meal. Crow hopped backward, awkwardly, remembering that some snakes like to eat birds and their eggs, and that her people have also been known to eat snakes from time to time. I don't want to fight with you, she said, retreating to a nearby branch. I'd like to be friends. Friends, rumbled the darker snake, emerging now fully into the daylight with gleaming scales. Friends hold a small space for strife between them, a safe space to hiss. And the two snakes began to dance, winding around each other and hissing, darting their tongues out in a kind of play fight that Crow watched from above. Their gleaming shapes twisted and curled, and the snakes began to look like rivers. Something in their dance began to flicker and move inside her, too. A pressure she'd been feeling since she first landed in this strange forest, since she first talked to the stag, finally began to burst and flow. Oh, yes. Yes.
Yes. Thank you for I love how you read this story.
Oh, my gosh. These snakes are beloved to me. Karina, though, what struck you most in this chapter?
Besides all the S noises?
Besides all the S noises.
I really love this chapter. I feel very personally connected to it in a way that, you know, this whole process of writing these fables, writing them chapter by chapter, is a vulnerable one for us. Mm-hmm. We are branching out into territory that is not usual, and we're doing it about really big, hard topics. And mm-hmm. I just want to say, this is what it feels like sometimes to be a witch or to be in touch with spirit as a creator. Is that we use the tools that we have to try to make the things that need to come through us. And mm-hmm. we do a lot of experimenting. And as we've been showing up for the fables, the small chapters of the one larger fable this whole year, I think I've had like some fear in the pit of my stomach every single time around, are we gonna nail it? Are we gonna get the magic right? Are we going to get the feeling that needs to come through and the ideas that are so important around how mm-hmm. we encounter the hard things, including difference, bigotry, the way that we get dissociated from ourselves, all the shadow work, right, that is both personal and that connects us to our worlds. And I feel proud of this chapter, and specifically I feel proud of how we are able in it to tell a story that's about anger and conflict that doesn't say conflict is bad or should never happen, but that speaks to the need for strife, as the, you know, the line, friends hold a small space for strife between them. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember you and I going back for a long time, back and forth around that sentence, around like, what should, mm-hmm. what is the thing that the snakes are really telling Crow? And I think that the way that's phrased works for me, at least. It really works for mm-hmm. me to be like, yeah, we do need to hold a small space of strife, not a huge one, but we need to hold that space in order to be in intimacy. We need to have the potential for conflict to come through. We need to be guarding that space of, you know, where does my shadow self, my more monstery side, my more selfish, angry, nasty side mm-hmm. get to be known and seen without doing extreme harm, but also without me always hiding something about myself and always trying mm-hmm. to pretend that I am more evolved, more enlightened, peace and light and love, right?
I think that's what happens, right? That's what happens when we deny those aspects right. of ourselves, I suppose, right? And also just the word dissonance is coming to mind.
Because it has so many S's right? in it.
Dissonance, yeah. But that holding a space for conflict and intimacy with people is saying, in a way, I love you and will love you, knowing that there are these nasty bits inside of you. Gosh, I'm just still the snake. All these nasty bits. I think these snakes are me, and I am these snakes. But that by holding that for others, we're also holding a space for our own dissonance, for the dissonance between who we think we are, who we want to be, and the reality that we are all full of monsters. Because I know, I'm going with it. One of my favorite lines in this is, always important to feed your feelings or else they will make a meal of you, which I don't know that I can say I actually totally understand what it means, but I think that the snake does and that there's a lesson in that. For me, I can't do this. It's hilarious. I think there are always this many S's and I'm just saying them this time.
Please, this is a safe space for sibilance.
Bless you, my sister.
And this is how our podcast evolves.
Do you say devolves or evolves? Because I guess I just love that the snakes are, they're not saying violence is good. They're saying, if you forget that violence is possible and can be there, is there, you're almost more likely to do
right,
it.
Right, right.
Right? If you recognize that you're angry, you might be much more likely to be careful with your anger. Oh, I'm furious right now, right? Instead of being like, I don't know how I feel. I'm a pleasant little bird walking around. I'm going to kick people in the head, right?
And I also want to say that it was a sense of self-righteousness or entitlement, you know, that we followed Crow from the last chapter, you know, that she was really like, nobody understands me and I am clearly right and good and I am not getting the respect that I deserve and therefore I'm going to kick some rocks.
Yeah, I'm feeling unsatisfied.
So, Joe, what does it feel like for you when you try on Crow's point of view in this particular chapter?
Let me go in and find out. I feel a kind of excitement and stimulation around unusual experiences, unusual interactions. I'm feeling how unsatisfying my meeting was with Stag and how also unsatisfying my meeting was with Owl and how these snakes are not really who I thought I came to see. And yet they're giving me so much more attention and information. And it's
and
not
respect,
the and respect. It's and it's not what I thought I was looking for at all. But I'm having a feeling being in Crow's body that like something is really finally starting to move and be contacted inside of me, similar to how it felt when I was in the mountain. Something along those lines, like that I'm really being taught something and really being contacted in a deep way. And really the feeling that I have is excitement. I feel excited about being contacted and excited about being moved. Excuse me. What about you, Karita?
I, having like woken up on the wrong side of the bed this morning, I'm really identifying with the nameless moodiness and grumpiness of the beginning, of Crow at the beginning. And thinking about the sense of alarm that I have felt when I've been in conflict with people, both strangers and dear friends, and how that alarm has shifted when I've been in conflict with dear friends who have stayed with me through the conflict, you included.
Mm-hmm, totally.
But I also just want to give a shout out to my friend Iris, who I used to live with, who's a human who moves towards conflict, and how we were not great housemates, and we are wonderful friends now because we were able to do that work of talking about how we were not great housemates. And when we were doing it, it was scary. I was worried about what if we can't live together anymore, which did turn out to be true, and it turned out to be fine. But when you're in the house, it's scary to have that conversation. And I was also more worried, what if I lose this friendship? And so for me in that situation, doing conflict in a way that was really like respectful and deep and got into our emotional histories and our family histories and what
it's
we were
so
doing.
Intimate.
It's very so intimate. It's very intimate. And so when I put myself into Crow's body here, that's what I'm feeling, is I'm feeling this sense of alarm, but also of intimacy. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a chapter that for me moves the relationship Crow's able to have more deeply. Every single other creature and being that Crow has encountered before now, she's had a wall up. She's had a screen on which she was projecting, this is how I want you to see me, this is how I'm imagining you exist. And this is the first encounter where she's really like, I am a kind of a roiling mess inside, and you are seeing me very clearly. You're seeing my roiling mess, and you're seeing it without a lot of without needing to push me away from contact. With, you know, the snakes are really like, I'm here.
They're kind of into it.
Yeah.
They're totally into it.
And they also bring up, I'm going to go back right now and just see what were the exact words were. When they say your feelings will make a meal out of you, they're not necessarily threatening Crow, but she remembers that snakes sometimes eat birds and eggs, right? Mm-hmm. And that sometimes birds eat snakes. She remembers that there is a potential for serious violence between her and these creatures. And that awareness, I think, coming in that place of intimacy is so powerful. Mm-hmm. Because it reminds me of what we feel when we become intimate with anyone. You know, that there's, I think, I'm trying to remember where I read this. It might have been Rezma Menakem writes in a book about relationships that I think is called Rock the Boat. You know, about like how important it is to do conflict in relationships because it's always there. I believe, and I'm probably misquoting him, but I believe he says something to the effect of, when we deeply love someone, there's a part of ourselves that hates and fears them because of how scary it is to love someone that much, and how threatening it is to our well-being, the thought that this person could leave or, you know, be separate from us somehow.
Yeah.
Does that sound, Joe, do you want to correct me on that?
No, I haven't read that book.
Okay.
I think it makes sense to say this is what I remember associating to when I read that book, but I don't remember, right? Like, I don't remember exactly what he said.
Totally.
My mind is. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'll put a link into the show notes
Great.
So that people can read it themselves and correct me if you want to.
I'm associating to being a parent and having a little kid and recognizing that they would devour us if they could, right? That each of us at some point in our development comes into this world and like has to realize that our hunger outsizes what we can actually have.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that is a part of the fear of loving.
Yeah.
Also, is that when you do love, there's this element of annihilation in it potentially, right? Like uh-huh. Even just that thing of like, I love you so much, I'm going to eat you up.
Right.
Right. But just, I experienced day after day that she really would have, all of me. Mm-hmm. And it would destroy both of us.
Mm-hmm.
If she got to have all of me, we'd mm-hmm. both be destroyed.
Mm.
And so there's in order for me to say, no, this part of me you cannot have, we have conflict and we have boundaries.
Uh-huh.
And so we have intimacy. And right. so we have the structure needed to maintain a relationship where we both get to stay alive and stay fed mm-hmm. instead of being devoured by this hunger to be loved or to be a part of or to be secure or to mm-hmm. be one with, right? That
right.
that at some point that being one with destroys both of us.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah, it's no longer Ooh. Symbiosis at that point.
No, it's yeah. annihilation.
Yeah. Do you think there's love in this chapter?
You know, you said respect, and respect is one of the things that I associate to when people are confused about what love is or what love feels like, you know, when you're trying to learn what it's like, if the way that it was taught to you is really twisted.
Mm-hmm.
Like being seen is being loved, being respected mm-hmm. can mean being loved. And I think that these snakes are seeing and respecting yeah. Crow and modeling it in a way that Crow is like, oh, you're witnessing me in a way where I'm able to be honest with myself about what I'm feeling.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah.
Not to mention, it gets pretty trippy there at the end.
Yeah. What do you think is coming next?
Portals, portals, portals.
The pressure that has been building is finally bursting and flowing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just loving that the snakes are there as concrete teachers. And then they are also become mystic. They become like drugs. They become these sort of medicines for like mystic visioning for the Crow,
yeah.
right? So
yeah.
they transform from practical, really important shadow teachers into whatever it is that's going to happen when Crow just starts like vibing out.
Going on a psychedelic
mission into the shadow and into the waters.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, into the place where who she thinks she is and who she thinks everyone is gets to dissolve, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm very excited.
Beautiful.
And that's a wrap. That's the end.
We are ceasing
to record our podcast, our sister time together. Stormy Bird Crow, that's my true nature.
Yeah I'm sorry that you have not been called that all of your days.
Mm-hmm. it can start now, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Karina, what do we have for our dear listeners at the end today?
We want you to buy our new calendar. 2023, home. It's so good.
It really is.
It is the calendar that has taken us the longest to make of any of our calendars. Usually, when we first started, we would be like, whip it out in like 1 or 2 weeks, because this is just a fun side project, and we got to get back to our lives. And this being our 11th or 12th?
12th.
This is our 12th calendar. And the constraints of our lives these days are very different, and it ended up taking us 6 months to fully draw and paint and put together this one for you. And I think it shows I think the care and the time that we put into it really show. And the theme this year is Spells for a Changing World. And we were in conversation with the understanding that we are all moving into unprecedented times and that we need spells to guide us and hold us and support us in meeting these times, in feeling the grief, in feeling the fear, and in accessing our sense of resilience and creativity together. So that is the theme of the calendar this year. And I just cannot wait for you all to get your hands on it and to be doing this time-based art with us, where we hang the same art on our walls and change it at those regularly scheduled times throughout the year.
That was such a lovely way to talk about it. I don't know, you know, what I have to say about the calendar is like lives in that place in me where the things are hard to say. Where if I close my eyes, I have this sense of like the colors that are in it and the beings and the words and just how much I remember being an active collaborative part of putting them all together. And yet now that they're all together, how kind of in awe I am of this thing that was created, as though I wasn't there, you know, as though it's now something so much more whole and so much more powerful than it feels like I could have ever actually had a hand in creating.
I think that's one of the beautiful things about being a collaborator, because we collaborate with each other and we also collaborate with our own guidance and with all the non-incarnate beings. And, well, not all of them, the ones that are, you know.
All of ours.
Yes.
All of ours.
Our crew. And it means that when we see the finished product, I have the exact same feeling of being like, oh, I can brag about this because this isn't mine. This is much bigger than just my contribution to it. But,
Do you have a question for me? Oh, before that, I think you guys know where to find our art, but just in case, you can go to abacuscorvus.com/shop and you'll find it all. Oh my God, we also have super freaking cute greeting cards that are some of our newer images. The only things that we had that are like one-offs of some of the 2023 images are a couple of greeting cards that we now have that are...
And they're selling out fast.
Yeah, they are.
All right, Joe.
Yes.
Or should I say, Stormy Birdcrow?
Yes.
Can you tell me your favorite word that's full of S's?
Dissonance is what's coming up for me. Dissonance. Yeah.